Tonight, what I'd like to talk about are some developments in the understanding of the resurrection that happened in the period between the Testaments. Most of us are pretty familiar with the idea that there were, by the time of Jesus, a number of different sects among the Jews. The two that we read about most often in the New Testament are Pharisees and Sadducees. Now, there were some other sects, and we'll talk about those in just a minute. But by the time of Jesus, these different factions among the Jews had developed some different ways of looking at the information about the resurrection. In Matthew, the 22nd chapter, beginning at verse 23, you see Jesus having a conversation on this occasion with some Sadducees. They say that there is no resurrection. And Jesus explains to them in answer to their question. They'd ask a question about what would happen in the resurrection if a man followed the Levirate vow and took his brother's wife if his brother had died and there were no children. And they said, they complicated the situation as much as they could. They said, seven brothers had this woman as their wife. They all died childless. So in the resurrection, who's going to be married to her? And Jesus, of course, responds to them in this way in verse 30. In the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but they're like the angels in heaven. As touching the resurrection of the dead, have you not read that which was spoken to you by God, saying, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. God is not the God of the dead, but of the living. So he corrects their misunderstanding of Old Testament information. Now, you have to remember, at the time that Jesus walked on the earth, the only communication that they had that had come from God was contained in the Old Testament. When Paul is on trial in Acts 23, he recognizes this division that existed between the Sadducees, who said that there is no resurrection, and the Pharisees, who said that there was a resurrection. So he's appearing before the Sanhedrin council. And you have to understand the Sanhedrin is made up of primarily these two groups. Ideally, there were 70 people that were on the council. 35 would have been Pharisees, 35 would have been Sadducees. It didn't always work out that way because the Sadducees wielded a lot of power, particularly during the time of the Roman occupation. But needless to say, Paul is on trial before a group that is composed of Pharisees and Sadducees. And so as he recognized that some of them were Sadducees, some were Pharisees, he said, brethren, I'm a Pharisee, son of Pharisees. Touching the hope of the resurrection of the dead, I'm called into question. For the Sadducees say that there is no resurrection, neither angel nor spirit, but the Pharisee confesses both. So that raises a lot of interesting questions. Where did these groups come from? They're not in the Old Testament. They're not a part of the law. They're not a part of any of the prophets' work. Where did these groups come from? And they weren't the only groups that existed by the time that Jesus came. Judaism had gone through an amazing transformation. It was, by the time of Jesus, Judaism was not what it was when Moses delivered the law. So by the time of Jesus, you have at least these five distinct groups among the Pharisees, or among the Jews. You had the Pharisees, you had the Sadducees. Those are the two dominant groups. But there were other factions. There were the Essenes. The Essenes primarily lived in the wilderness. They are the group that probably put together the Qumran scrolls that you've read about that were discovered in the 1950s. They were ascetics. They separated themselves from any kind of urbanization because they felt like urbanization was giving themselves over to a different kind of life. You also had the Zealots. And remember, the Zealots were the ones who were willing to fight against Rome to the death. In fact, it's suggested that when Rome finally destroyed Jerusalem, it wasn't the Romans that started the fires that were so destructive in the city. It was the Zealots. They started burning the city so that the people in the city would fight back against the Romans. It was kind of like, we only have so much food. Let's destroy the food. Then you'll have to fight. Well, that was the Zealots. And they don't play a large role in the life of Judaism as it's described in the New Testament. But you have to understand that they were around. Then you had the Samaritans. The Samaritans were in many ways a descendant of those people that had been carried off into Assyrian captivity. They came out of the northern 10 tribes. They were, of course, of Jewish descent, but when they came back from Assyrian captivity, they had lost their distinctiveness as Jews. They had intermarried among the Assyrians, and so when they came back, they were disrespected by the majority of the Jews, those that lived in the southern two tribes. They became Judah. Israel had become Samaritans to the extent that they continued to exist. The Samaritans play a little bit of a role in the New Testament. Remember, it was a Samaritan that Jesus encountered at the well, and he talked to her about her beliefs. John, the fourth chapter, she was talking to him and she said, our parents, our brand of Jews worships in Mount Gerizim. Your brand of Jews worships in Jerusalem. Now that was, those were distinctions that never should have existed. But Jesus says in response to her, you have to understand, those distinctions are unimportant when it comes time for me to begin the church. God is a spirit. He seeks those who would worship him in spirit and truth. And it's irrespective of where you would worship. Now, the Samaritans, interestingly, because of their background, perhaps, only acknowledged the first five books of the Old Testament. They only acknowledged the Torah. And maybe you can understand that because that takes them back to a time when they were a part of Jewry. That was before the time when they had been carried off into Assyrian captivity. So I can understand some of that, but frankly, I can't find too much that was written by the Samaritans about why they chose to follow only the first five books. I do find some indication when I read the history, that they had a belief that the first five books were all that should be accepted. Now, why is that important? In context of the resurrection, go back to what we studied last week. There's not much in the first five books. There's just a little bit in the first five books. Some really vague hints. The specificity doesn't start to appear until you get into the writings of the prophets. So let's go back and talk about the Pharisees and the Sadducees, because these are the two groups. The Pharisees accepted the resurrection, and the Sadducees denied the resurrection. Who were the Pharisees? Yeah, Annie.
I got a clarifying question. Were you saying that the Samaritans are the ones that were holding that the first five are the only? Were you saying that the Samaritans are the ones that were holding that the first five?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
I got lost in that.
The Samaritans wanted the first five only.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Okay. Who are the Pharisees? Pharisees tended to be the lawyers and the scribes. You know what scribes did? They were transcriptionists. They basically just wrote down, copied the Old Testament scriptures. And then you had the lawyers. And remember that Israel is a theocracy. So the Old Testament scriptures are their constitution. So you had the scribes who copied it. They were copyists. And because they were copyists, they probably knew how to read. And they were some of the people that were most skilled in knowing what the law said, just because they copied it over and over and over again. And then you had the lawyers. So if you had to go to trial, you were tried on the basis of the Old Testament. Okay, that was their law. So you had the lawyers. Now, this group accepted oral tradition. Oral tradition was, for the most part, included in the Talmud. And the Pharisees wanted to argue that when Moses went up on the mountain to receive the law, he was given the law that was written down, and then he was also given the oral tradition, and the oral tradition told you how to keep the law. That's all fanciful. It doesn't exist. You can look until your eyes turn blue, and you won't find that distinction anywhere in the Old Testament. It does say that God gave Moses the law and he included some other things, but what he included was the things more than the Ten Commandments. Okay? The Pharisees like to think of themselves, well, the way they described themselves was they were a whitewashed cistern. Any truth that ever got in could never escape because they would do their best to preserve it. So they accepted the oral tradition as well as what had really been inspired by God. Now, whether we're talking about the law or we're talking about the Ten Commandments or we're talking about what the prophets had written, they were willing to say that that was given by God, and also there was the oral law, the oral commandments. So they wrote the oral ones down in what's called the Talmud. And the Mishnah is the first part of the Talmud where they wrote down the things that they said Moses had been given as a part of the oral tradition. And then later they wrote different things that needed to be added to that. So there are the obsessive rule makers. They build fences around the law. They're, as we said before, they're doing it not because they don't respect God. They're doing it because they want to make sure that people understand how they're supposed to keep the law. So they're obsessive fence makers. Now, the problem with their oral tradition, the Mishnah, the Talmud in its entirety, the problem with all of that was that that, in their minds, became equivalent to law. It wasn't. Some of them were good ideas. Okay? Many of them served the purpose of helping people to keep the law. But when God said, respect that you should observe the Sabbath and keep it holy, you should not do any work, they took it upon themselves to define exactly what work was. Okay? So if you read through the beginning of the Mishnah, you will find out that a fat man can't sit in the door of his house on the Sabbath day. That was considered work. You know why? He might be trapping an animal inside and he was going to kill it on Monday. Or kill it on Sunday, excuse me. So a fat man couldn't sit in the door of his house on the Sabbath day. That was work. Now, I understand what they're saying. You know, when God said don't do any work, he was serious about that. And they really did want people to observe that. Another tradition that they had. If you were a woman, you could not look in a mirror on the Sabbath day. You know why? You might be tempted to pluck out a gray hair, and that would be work. So you couldn't look in the mirror on the Sabbath day. If you were a scribe and you were walking in Jerusalem, you couldn't drag a stick behind you. Again, why? Because that might be writing something in the dirt. That's why they had so much trouble with Jesus when he stooped down and wrote in the dirt. Okay? It's all with a noble purpose, but it got out of hand. The real problem is not that they made these laws, some of which were silly. The real problem is they were willing to accept something beyond what God had given. Now, they were also strict separatists as far as their relations with the Greeks and the Romans were concerned. The Pharisees refused to circumcise or refused to give their children Roman names. They circumcised their children. They refused to speak the Greek language. It was the Pharisees that were so opposed to the translation of the Old Testament in the Septuagint because it should never have been translated out of the Hebrew. So they're strict separatists, and they believed in the resurrection. They interpreted the Old Testament information pretty much the way that we have described it, the five themes that we saw. And of those five themes in the Old Testament, the one that I think is the real sticking point is the bodily resurrection. Okay, who were the Sadducees? Well, to get a handle on the Sadducees, you have to understand some things that went on. Before Rome came to power, well, I should say before Greece came to power, the Jews were pretty much self-governing. Then along comes Antiochus Epiphanes. He is a Greek. He shuts down Jewish worship. But he doesn't last very long. And then there is the revolt against the Greeks that's led by the Maccabees. And the Jews kind of reestablish their own sovereignty, at least until the Romans get tired of it. And then the Romans shut everything down. The Sadducees come to power. They begin to organize as the Jews are having to deal with these foreign powers. They, generally speaking, were the priestly class. Now, the priests were described in the Old Testament. That's absolutely correct. They were never to be a distinct class among the Jews. It was in the Old Testament, it was a job. Okay? So they are the priests. Their job was to officiate in the temple and to maintain the archives of the Jews. But as you might expect, when the temple is destroyed by the Romans in 70, these guys are out of a job. So from being centrally located in Jerusalem and wielding a great deal of political power, they're forced to move north. And by the time that the Apostle Paul writes, those Jews that were Sadducees have migrated up to the area of the Samaritans, and they become allied with the Samaritans. Now, it's a little difficult to figure out just exactly what's going on with the Sadducees. They contend that the only thing that is law is what God gave. So that, as I see it, would include the Torah. It would include what the prophets wrote. There were all those things. That was the only thing that was to be accepted and to be followed. They rejected oral tradition. And you, as you might guess, there was a fight with the Pharisees. The Sadducees and the Pharisees didn't get along. If you think that the Romans and the Christians didn't get along, the Sadducees and the Pharisees really didn't get along. And it was over this oral tradition. They rejected, in my mind, the bodily resurrection. Now, it's a little hard to get a grip on the Sadducees because they tended not to write anything down. And in part, that's because they could see what had happened when the Pharisees started writing things down. So they weren't going to write anything down because that way it couldn't be elevated to the level of the law. The only thing that they accepted was the written law. And by the time of Jesus, understand, the Old Testament, the scriptures, as far as the Jews were concerned, included all of the Old Testament canon at that time. That's Genesis through Malachi. That's what it included. It's been said that the Sadducees only accepted the first five books. That's not true. That comes from a statement that's made by Origen in the 300s. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. But the Sadducees, as the priestly class, accepted the entirety of the old law. Now, how do I know that? How can I be sure of that? Because When Jesus was born, you remember the events that transpired. The Magi come from the north. They came to Herod. They inquired of Herod where the baby was to be born. That's Matthew, the second chapter, verses 1-6. Herod didn't know. So Herod asked the priests, where's the baby supposed to be born? Now, the Magi have one reason for wanting to figure that out. They want to go worship. Herod has a reason for figuring that out because he wants to kill the Christ child. So Herod asks the priests, where's the baby going to be born? And they tell him, the scriptures say that he will be born in Bethlehem. That's not Torah. That's, to say that they only accepted the Torah as the scriptures would be wrong, because they said, we know where he's going to be born. And that comes from the prophet Micah, not from the first five books. So the Sadducees, it's been argued by a lot of people that the Sadducees only accepted the first five books, but that comes from a statement by Origen, who's writing in the 300s after the Sadducees had lost power in Jerusalem and they've moved north. And they've begun to align themselves with the Samaritans in order to have political power. And the Samaritans were the ones that only accepted the Torah, not the Sadducees. So their rejection of the resurrection, they didn't believe in the resurrection, comes from a different interpretation of the Old Testament. It's not because they rejected everything except the Torah. One of the reasons that the church fathers, Origen in particular, and a statement misinterpreted what the statement was that had been made by Flavius Josephus much earlier. Josephus is writing in the first century, and Josephus says regarding the Sadducees, they admit no observance at all apart from the laws. So people jumped on that statement and said, Sadducees only accepted the Torah. That's not true. They accepted the entirety of the Old Testament scriptures. Now, this leads me to conclude that the Sadducees' problem with the resurrection was that they rejected the bodily resurrection. They didn't reject the notion of a resurrection, but they made it a spiritual thing. Something that could happen and you wouldn't see it, even if you were standing there. It was all spiritual, as far as the Sadducees would have been concerned. That's why the Apostle Paul spends so much time in 1 Corinthians 15 talking about the body. If we're going to say you accept the resurrection, then what we're saying is that you accept the bodily resurrection. Now, Paul explains, a grain of wheat falls in the ground, it is raised, it doesn't look like the grain of wheat, now it's a wheat plant, okay? And that argues that when the bodily resurrection happens, we may not look exactly like we happen to look now. And I pray that that's the case, that I look like I did when I was 18. I was a lot cuter then. Yeah. No. Mandy.
No, I don't have no.
Okay. Just making a bid.
Yep.
Okay. Sounds good. They rejected the resurrection because they rejected the bodily resurrection. The references that they make to the resurrection in the scant writings that I can discover are just, they're really oblique kinds of references. So I think the problem was they didn't accept the bodily resurrection. That's why when the Apostle Paul wrote about some people who overthrow the faith of some because they say the resurrection has passed already, that would be a spiritual resurrection that could have happened and you wouldn't notice it. And Paul has to correct that problem as well. I think that comes from the Sadducees and what they were teaching. So to say that they didn't believe in the resurrection is to say that they didn't believe in the bodily resurrection, which is an important theme as we saw when we looked at the five themes that are associated with the resurrection. Okay, I'm sorry that was so much lecture. Just a lot of kind of information to go through that we don't talk about very often. We, you know, I've had Bible classes with people and said, and had them ask me a question. Who are the Pharisees? When I finished reading Malachi, I get to Matthew and all of a sudden there are these Pharisees. Yeah, Lenny.
How did they come up with a spiritual resurrection?
I don't know the answer to that. I tried to trace that through their writings. They just didn't write very much. And I realized that this is a conclusion that I reach based on the totality of information that I can see. But it does explain why the Apostle Paul had to deal with the reality of bodily resurrection so many times. And particularly in 1 Corinthians 15. Yeah, Bill.
If there's a spiritual resurrection and you couldn't tell what was happening, if the spirit leaves the body, doesn't the body fall down dead?
I don't know exactly what they argued would happen to the body. They just argued that the spirit continued. I don't know how that would be. But if you deny the bodily resurrection, you have denied the resurrection. It's no different than saying, if you deny baptism, you deny Jesus, because that's what he came for. That's part and parcel of what he was. So if you deny the bodily resurrection, you're denying the resurrection. That's part and parcel of the resurrection. Now, why is that so important? Because that's what I'm hoping for. Okay. Next week, we'll start talking about New Testament information. And we can be more confident when we talk about that than we can be confident about the part that we're talking about tonight. Because this comes from trying to figure out where these Pharisees and Sadducees came from. They're there when you get to the New Testament, but you just don't know. And they basically arose during the time of the Babylonian exile. That's when they started developing their political power.
If I've got a handle on this, and from a little different angle, the Pharisees are the ones who, when they came back from Babylon, they're the ones who say that we're better because we're pure and the Samaritans aren't. So we have a better grasp on that. And then the Sadducees look at the Pharisees and they say, well, you can't give me book, chapter, and verse. You've messed up. You've added all these other things. And then the Samaritans, they're holding on to just a little bit of God's word and not all of God's word.
The part of the Samaritans tended, this is my understanding. I can't find this in the Bible. I can't give you book, chapter, and verse for this. My understanding of why the Samaritans would go to the Torah is because that predates the time when they were carried away. Okay. And that's really what they're interested in. So I can understand why they would do that. I can't give you book, chapter, and verse that says that that was the case. All that I have is so restricted because it's just, I have Jesus and his encounter with the Samaritan. And then I have the story of the Good Samaritan, which is an indication that they probably had a belief in God. It's just may have been a little bit twisted, but the Jews hated them. Jews wouldn't talk to them. Remember what the woman at the well said. You know, I'm a Samaritan. Here you are talking to a Samaritan, and on top of that, talking to a woman. So the Jews didn't like the Samaritans at all. They were kind of outcasts. Yeah, Bill?
Well, you referred to the Samaritans probably had some kind of a faith they hung on to. That she witnessed to that when she went back and talked to them and said, could this be the Christ? This the one that we know is coming. They definitely had a faith that there was going to be a Savior.
Right. Right. They had not given up their faith entirely. They had not pursued it. They had not pursued purity to the extent that the Jews did when they, the Jews, the southern two tribes, when they went to Babylonian captivity. Remember, in the Old Testament, you have Israel, then they divide, and you have Israel, northern 10 tribes, Judah, southern two tribes. In the Old Testament, it comes from Judah. Okay? Old Testament Jew was, after the time of the divided kingdom, didn't refer to the northern 10 tribes. It only referred to the southern two tribes. And they did perceive themselves as better than everybody else. In fact, they were absolutely racist. That's why the Hebrews, the Grecian widows were being neglected in the daily ministration, even in the church. Yeah.
I think one of the things I wanted to also say is that it doesn't matter which of those three groups that you were in, everybody was twisting the law to some extent with their own perception. And I think that's something we all have to be careful of, is preconceived ideas that we have that we carry through. And it's very easy to build walls.
Oh, yeah. And remember, if there was any group among the Jews that would have insisted on book, chapter, and verse, it was the Sadducees. If you said, give me book, chapter, and verse, a Pharisee was just as likely to quote the Talmud. Because as far as he was concerned, book, chapter, and verse included the Talmud. The Sadducees, nope, just book, chapter, and verse, Old Testament.